This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Go Ask Alice by Anonymous, narrated by Christina Moore. The editors of this book open with the following note.
Go Ask Alice is based on the actual diary of a 15-year-old drug user. It is not a definitive statement on the middle-class, teenage drug world. It does not offer any solutions. It is, however, a highly personal and specific chronicle. As such, we hope it will provide insights into the increasingly complicated world in which we live. Names, dates, places, and certain events have been changed in accordance with the wishes of those concerned.
And now, Go Ask Alice.
September 16. Yesterday, I remember thinking I was the happiest person in the whole earth, in the whole galaxy, in all of God's creation. Could that only have been yesterday? Or was it endless light years ago? I was thinking that the grass had never smelled grassier. The sky had never seemed so high. Now it's all smashed down upon my head, and I wish I could just melt into the blahness of the universe and cease to exist. Oh, why can't I? How can I face Sharon and Debbie and the rest of the kids? How can I? By now the word has gotten around the whole school. I know it has. Yesterday I bought this diary because I thought at last I'd have something wonderful and great and worthwhile to say, something so personal that I wouldn't be able to share it with another living person, only myself. Now, like everything else in my life, it has become so much nothing. I really don't understand how Roger could have done this to me when I've loved him for as long as I can remember and I've waited all my life for him to see me. Yesterday when he asked me out, I thought I'd literally and completely die with happiness. I really did. And now the whole world is cold and gray and unfeeling and my mother is nagging me to clean up my room. How can she nag me to clean up my room when I feel like dying? Can't I even have the privacy of my own soul? Diary, you'll have to wait until tomorrow, or I'll have to go through the long lecture again about my attitude and my immaturity. See ya. September 17. School was a nightmare. I was afraid I'd see Roger every time I turned a corner in the hall. Yet I was desperate for fear I wouldn't see him. I kept telling myself, maybe something went wrong and he'll explain. At lunch I had to tell the girls about his not showing. I pretended I didn't care, but oh, diary, I do. I care so much I feel that my whole insides have shattered. How is it possible for me to be so miserable and embarrassed and humiliated and beaten and still function, still talk and smile and concentrate? How could Roger have done this to me? I wouldn't intentionally hurt anyone in this whole world. I wouldn't hurt them physically or emotionally. How then can people so consistently do it to me? Even my parents treat me like I'm stupid and inferior and ever short. I guess I'll never measure up to anyone's expectations. I surely don't measure up to what I'd like to be. September 19. Dad's birthday. Not much. September 20. It's my birthday. I'm 15. Nothing. September 25. Dear Diary, I haven't written for about a week because nothing of interest has happened. The same old dumb teachers teaching the same old dumb subjects in the same old dumb school. I seem to be kind of losing interest in everything. At first I thought high school would be fun, but it's just dull. Everything's dull. Maybe it's just because I'm growing up and life is becoming more blasé. Julie Brown had a party, but I didn't go. I've put on 7 ugly, fat, sloppy, slobby pounds, and I don't have anything I can wear. I'm beginning to look as slobby as I feel. September 30. Wonderful news, Diary. We're moving. Daddy has been invited to become the dean of political science at blank. Isn't that exciting? Maybe it will be like it was when I was younger. Maybe again he'll teach in Europe every summer, and we'll go with him like we used to. Oh, those were the fun times. I'm going to start on a diet this very day. I will be a positively different person by the time we get to our new home. Not one more bite of chocolate, or nary a French fried potato, will pass my lips till I've lost 10 globby pounds of lumpy lard. And I'm going to make a completely new wardrobe. Who cares about ridiculous Roger? Confidentially, diary, I still care. I guess I'll always love him. But maybe just before we leave, and I'm thin, and my skin is absolutely flawless and petal smooth and clear, and I have clothes like a fashion model, he'll ask me for another date. Shall I turn him down, or stand him up, or will I? I'm afraid I will weaken and go out with him. Oh, please, diary, help me to be strong and consistent. Help me to exercise every morning and night and clean my skin and eat right and be optimistic and agreeable and positive and cheerful. I want so much to be someone important or even just asked out by a boy every once in a while. Maybe the new me will be different. October 10. Dear diary, I've lost 3 pounds, and we're busy getting sort of semi-organized to move. Our house is up for sale, and Mom and Dad have gone to look for a place in blank. I'm staying here with Tim and Alexandria, and as much as you'll be surprised, they don't even bug me. We're all excited about moving, and they do whatever I tell them about helping with the house and meals and such. Well, almost. I guess Dad will be taking over the new position at midterm. He's as excited as a little boy, and it's kind of like old times. We sit around the table and laugh and joke and make plans together. It's great. Tim and Alex insist they have to take all their toys and junk. Personally, I'd like to get a whole new everything, except my books, of course. They are part of my life. When I was hit by a car in the 5th grade and was in a cast for such a long time, I'd have died without them. Even now, I'm not really sure which parts of myself are real and which parts are things I've gotten from books. But anyway, it's great. Life is positively great and wonderful and exciting, and I can't wait to see what's behind the next corner, and all the corners after that. October 16. Mom and Dad came back today. Hooray, we have a house! It's a large old Spanish-type house, which Mom loves. I can't wait to move. I can't wait, I can't wait! They took pictures, which will be back in 3 or 4 days. I can't wait, I can't wait! Or have I said that a million times before? October 17. Even school is exciting again. I got an A on my algebra paper, and everything else is going A and B, too. Algebra is the worst. If I can pass that, I guess I can do anything. Usually I'm lucky to get a C, even when I kill myself. Isn't it funny? But it seems that when something is going good, everything else goes good, too. I'm even getting along better with Mom. She doesn't seem to nag at me so much anymore. I can't figure out which one of us has changed. I really can't. Am I being more whatever it is she wants me to be, so she doesn't have to always be on my back? Or is it she is less demanding? I even saw Roger in the hall and couldn't have cared less. He said hi to me and stopped to talk, but I just walked on by. He's not going to drop me on my head again. Gee, only a little over 3 months. October 22. Scott Lossie asked me to go to the movies Friday. I've lost 10 pounds. I'm down to 115, which is all right, but I'd still like to lose another 10 pounds. Mom says I don't want to get that thin, but she doesn't know. I do, I do, I do. I haven't had one goodie for so long, I've almost forgotten what they taste like. Maybe Friday night I'll go on a binge and eat a few French fries. October 26. The movie was fun with Scott. We went out after, and I ate 6 wonderful, delicious, mouth-watering, delectable, heavenly French fries. That was really living in itself. I don't feel about Scott like I used to about Roger. I guess that was my one and only true love, but I'm glad it's over. Imagine me in my first year of high school and barely 15, and the one and only great love of my life is over. It seems kind of tragic in a way. Maybe someday, when we're both in college, we'll meet again. I hope so. I really do hope so. Last summer at Marion Hill's slumber party, someone brought in a Playboy magazine with a story in it about a girl sleeping with a boy for the first time. And all I could think about was Roger. I don't ever want to have sex with any other boy in the whole world, ever. Ever. I swear I'll die a virgin if Roger and I don't get together. I couldn't stand to ever have any other boy even touch me. I'm not even sure about Roger. Maybe later, when I'm older, I'll feel differently. Mother says that as girls get older, hormones invade our bloodstream, making our sexual desires greater. I guess I'm just developing slowly. I've heard some pretty wild stories about some of the kids at school. But I'm not them. I'm me. And besides, sex seems so strange and so inconvenient and so awkward. I keep thinking about our teacher in gym teaching us modern dance and always saying that it will make our bodies strong and healthy for childbearing. Then she harps and harps that everything must be graceful, graceful, graceful. I can hardly picture sex or having a baby as being graceful. Gotta go. See ya. November 10. Oh, dear diary, I'm so sorry I've neglected you, but I've been so busy. Here we are preparing for Thanksgiving already, and then Christmas. We sold our house last week to the Dillboroughs and their 7 kids. I do wish we could have sold it to someone with a smaller family. I hate to think of those 6 boys running up and down our beautiful front stairs with their dirty, sticky fingers on the walls and their dirty feet all over Mother's white carpeting. You know, when I think about things like that, I suddenly don't want to leave. I'm afraid. I've lived in this room all my 15 years, all my 5,530 days. I've laughed and cried and moaned and muttered in this room. I've loved people and things and hated them. It's been a big part of my life, of me. Will we ever be the same when we're closed in by other walls? Will we think other thoughts and have different emotions? Oh, Mother, Daddy, maybe we're making a mistake. Maybe we'll be leaving too much of ourselves behind. Dear precious diary, I'm baptizing you with my tears. I know we have to leave, and that one day I'll even have to leave my father and mother's home and go into a home of my own. But ever I will take you with me. November 30. Dear diary, sorry I didn't talk with you on Thanksgiving. It was so nice. Gran and Gramps were here for 2 days, and we talked about old times and lay around the living room. Daddy didn't even go to his office the whole time. Grandma made taffy with us, like she used to when we were little, and even Daddy pulled some. We all laughed a lot, and Alex got it in her hair, and Gramps got his false teeth stuck together, and we were almost hysterical. They're sorry we're moving so far away from them. And so are we. Home just won't be the same without Gran and Gramps dropping in. I really hope Daddy's right in making the move. December 4th. Dear Diary, Mama won't let me diet anymore. Just between us, I don't really know why it's any of her business. It's true I've had a cold for the last couple of weeks, but I know it's not the diet that's causing it. How can she be so stupid and irrational? This morning I was having my usual half grapefruit for breakfast, and she made me eat a slice of whole wheat bread and a scrambled egg and a piece of bacon. That's probably at least 400 calories, maybe even 500 or 600 or 700. I don't know why she can't let me live my own life. She doesn't like it when I look like a cow. Neither does anybody else. I don't even like myself. I wonder if I could go stick my finger down my throat and throw up after every meal. She says I'm going to have to start eating dinner again, too. And just when I'm getting down where I want to be, and I've quit fighting the hunger pangs. Oh, parents are a problem. That's one thing, Diary, you don't have to worry about. Only me. And I guess you're not very lucky at that, because I'm certainly no bargain. December 10. When I bought you, Diary, I was going to write religiously in you every day. But some days nothing worth writing happens, and other days I'm too busy or too bored or too angry or too annoyed, or just too me to do anything I don't have to do. I guess I'm a pretty lousy friend, even to you. Anyway, I feel closer to you than I do to even Debbie and Marie and Sharon, who are my very best friends. Even with them, I'm not really me. I'm partly somebody else, trying to fit in and say the right things and do the right thing and be in the right place and wear what everybody else is wearing. Sometimes I think we're all trying to be shadows of each other, trying to buy the same records and everything, even if we don't like them. Kids are like robots off an assembly line, and I don't want to be a robot. December 14. I just bought the most wonderful little single pearl pin for Mother's Christmas present. It cost me $9.50, but it's worth it. It's a cultured pearl, which means it's real, and it looks like my mom. Soft and shiny, but sturdy and dependable underneath, so it won't dribble all over the place. Oh, I hope she likes it. I want so very much for her to like it, and for her to like me. I still don't know what I'll get for Tim and Dad, but they're easier to buy for. I'd like to get a nice gold pencil holder or something for Dad to put on his big new desk in his big new office, so he'd think of me every time he looked at it, even in the middle of tremendously important conferences with all the leading brains in the world. But as usual, I can't afford a fraction of the things I want. December 17. Lucy Martin is having a Christmas party, and I'm supposed to bring a gelatin salad. It sounds like a lot of fun. At least I hope it will be. I've made myself a new white soft wool dress. Mother helped me, and it's really beautiful. Someday I hope I can sew as well as she does. In fact, someday I hope I can be like her. I wonder if when she was my age, she worried about boys not liking her and girls being only her part-time friends. I wonder if boys were as oversexed in those days as they are now. It seems like when we girls talk about our dates, that most of the boys are that way. None of my friends ever go all the way, but I guess a lot of the girls at school do. I wish I could talk to my mother about things like this, because I don't really believe a lot of the kids know what they're talking about. At least I can't believe all the stuff they tell me. December 22. The party at the Martins was fun. Dick Hill brought me home. He had his father's car, and we drove all over town and looked at the lights and sang Christmas carols. It sounds kind of corny, but it really wasn't. When we got home, he kissed me goodnight, but that's all. It kind of made me nervous, because I don't know if he doesn't like me, or just respects me, or what. I guess I just can't be secure no matter what happens. I sometimes wish I were going with someone, then I'd always know I had a date and I'd have someone I could really talk to. But my parents don't believe in that. And besides, confidentially, no one has ever been that interested in me. Sometimes I think no one ever will be. I really do like boys a lot. Sometimes I think I like them too much. But I'm not very popular. I wish I were popular and beautiful and wealthy and talented. Wouldn't it be nice to be like that? December 25. It's Christmas. Wonderful, magnificent, happy, holy Christmas. I'm so happy I can hardly contain myself. I got some books and records and a skirt I really love and a lot of little things. And Mother really loved her pin. She really did. She loved it. She put it right on her nightgown and wore it all day. Oh, I'm so happy she liked it. Gran and Gramps were here, and Uncle Arthur and Aunt Jeannie and their kids. It was really great. I guess Christmas is the very best time of the year. Everybody feels warm and secure and needed and wanted. Even me. I wish it could be like this all the time. I hated for today to come to an end. Not only because it was such a great day, but because this will be our last big holiday in this lovely house. Goodbye, dear house, dressed in your holiday finery of tinsel and holly and bright colored lights. I love you. I'll miss you. January 1. Last night, I went to a New Year's party at Scott's house. The kids got a little wild. Some of the boys were juicing it up. I came home early, saying I didn't feel well. But actually, it's just that I'm so excited about moving in 2 days that I'm beside myself. I'm sure I won't sleep at all for the next 2 nights. Imagine moving into a new home, and a new town, and a new county, and a new state all at the same time. Mom and Dad know a few people on the faculty, and they're at least casually acquainted with our new house. I've seen pictures of it, but it still seems like a large, cold, foreboding stranger. I do hope we like it, and it can adjust to us. Frankly, I wouldn't dare say this to anybody but you, Diary, but I'm not too sure I'm going to make it in a new town. I barely made it in our old town where I knew everybody and they knew me. I've never even allowed myself to think about it before, but I really haven't much to offer in a new situation. Oh, dear God, help me adjust. Help me be accepted. Help me belong. Don't let me be a social outcast and a drag on my family. Here I go, bawling again. What a boob. But there isn't any more I can do about that than there is I can do about moving. So you're wet again. It's a good thing diaries don't catch cold. January 4. We're here. It's barely January 4, only 10 minutes after 1, and Tim and Alex have been quarreling, and Mama has either the stomach flu or she's just upset because of the excitement. Anyway, Dad has had to stop twice so that she could throw up. Something went wrong and the lights haven't been turned on, and I think even Dad is about ready to turn around and go back home. Mom had made a diagram of where she wanted the movers to put everything, and they got it all fouled up. So we're all just going to roll up in bedding and sleep in whichever bed is handy. I'm glad I've got my little pocket flashlight. At least I can see to write. Confidentially, the house looks pretty weird and haunted. But maybe that's because there are no curtains up or anything. Maybe things will look brighter tomorrow. They certainly couldn't look worse. January 6. Sorry I haven't had time to write for 2 days, but we haven't stopped. We're still trying to get curtains hung and boxes unpacked and things put away. The house is beautiful. The walls are thick, dark wood, and there are 2 steps going down to a long, sunken living room. I've apologized to every room about the way I felt last night. I'm still worried about school, and today I must go. I wish Tim were in high school. Even a little brother would be better than no one, but he's in his second year of junior high. Already he's met a boy down the street his own age, and I should be happy for him, but I'm not. I'm sad for myself. Alexandria is still in grade school, and one of the professors lives close and has a daughter her age, so she'll go directly to his home after school. How lucky can you get? Built-in friends and everything. For me, as usual, nothing. A big, fat nothing. And probably just what I deserve. I wonder if the kids wear the same things they do at home. Oh, I hope I'm not so different they'll all stare at me. Oh, how I wish I had a friend. But I better paste on the big phony smile. Mother's calling, and I must respond with an attitude that will determine my altitude. 1, 2, 3, and here goes the martyr. Evening, January 6. Oh, Diary, it was miserable. It was the loneliest, coldest place in the world. Not one single person spoke to me during the whole endlessly long day. During lunch period, I fled to the nurse's office and said I had a headache. Then I cut my last class and went by the drugstore and had a chocolate malt, a double order of French fried potatoes, and a giant Hershey bar. There had to be something in life that was worthwhile. All the time I ate, I hated myself for being childish. Hurt as I am when I think about it, I have probably done the same thing to every new person that came to my schools. Either ignored them completely or stared at them out of curiosity. So I'm just getting cut back, and I guess I deserve it. But oh, am I ever suffering. I ache even in my fingernails and toenails and in my hair follicles. January 7. Last night's dinner was excruciating. Alex loves her new school and her new little friend, Tricia. Tim rode the bus with the neighbor boy and was in three of his classes. He said the girls were cuter than the ones at his old school, and he said they fell all over him. But that's the way it always is when a new boy moves in. Mom went to a tea and found everyone charming, beautiful, and pleasant. Isn't that nice? Well, like oil and water, I can't quite adapt or fit. Every so often I even seem to be on the outside just looking in on my own family. How can I possibly be such a dud when I come from this gregarious, friendly, elastic background? Gramps was in politics, and he was always the favored candidate, with Gran traveling by his side. So what is it with me? Am I some kind of a throwback? A misfit? A mistake. January 14. A whole week has gone by, and no one has done more than stare at me in a kind of curious, hostile, what are you doing here kind of way. I've tried to bury myself in books and my studies and my music and pretend I don't care. I guess I don't really care. And besides, what difference could it possibly make if I did? I've gained 5 pounds, and I don't care about that either. Mother's worried about me, I know, because I've become so quiet. But what is there to talk about? If I went by her standing rule of, if you can't say something nice about things, don't say anything at all, I'd never even open my mouth except to eat. And I've been doing plenty of that. February 8. Well, I've gained almost 15 pounds since we've been here. My face is a mess, and my hair is so stringy and oily I'd have to wash it every night to keep it decent. Dad's never home, and Mom's on my back all the time. Be happy, put up your hair, be positive, smile, show some spirit, be friendly. And if they tell me I'm acting negatively and immaturely one more time, I'm going to gag. I can't wear any of the clothes I made before I came here. And I know Tim is ashamed of me. When I'm around his friends, he treats me like a dum-dum, insults me, and makes remarks about my hippie hair. I'm getting fed up to here with this town, and school in general, and my family, and myself in particular. March 18. Well, I finally found a friend at school. She's as cloddy and misfitting as I am. But I guess that old poke about birds of a feather is true. One night, Goethe came to pick me up for the movies, and my folks were everything but rude to her. Imagine my long-suffering, sweet-mouthed mother being tempted to utter a slimy phrase about my drab-looking nobody friend. I wonder why she doesn't take a second look at her drab-looking nobody daughter. Or would that be too much for the well-groomed, thin, charming wife of the great professor, who might be the president of the school within a few years? I could see them all squirming a little, even as I have been squirming ever since we got to this impregnable hole. April 10. Oh, happiness and joy and elation! Mother has promised me that I can spend the summer at Gran's. I start on a diet as of today, this very minute. Of course, she had one little string attached to it, as she always does, that I get my grades back up. April 20. School is almost over, 2 more months, and I can hardly wait. Tim is intolerable, and Mother is constantly, constantly picking at me. Don't do this, don't do that. Do this, do that. Why don't you? You know you should. Now you're acting childish and immature again. I know she's always comparing me with Tim and Alexandria and I just simply can't measure up. It seems like every family has to have one goon. Guess who's it on this homestead? It's natural to have a little sibling rivalry, but ours is getting way out of control. I really do love Tim and Alex, but they've got plenty of faults, too. And I find it difficult to decide whether I love them more than I hate them, or whether I hate them more than I love them. This also applies to Mom and Dad. But truthfully, I guess it applies even more to myself. May 5. Every single teacher I have this term is an idiot and a drag. I read once that a person is lucky to have two good teachers who stimulate and motivate him in his whole lifetime. I guess I must have had my two in kindergarten and first grade, right? May 13. I met another girl walking home from school. She lives just 3 blocks from us, and her name is Beth Baum. She's really awfully nice. She's kind of shy, too, and prefers books to people just as I do. Her father's a doctor, and away from home most of the time, just like Dad. And her mother nags a lot. But then I guess all mothers do. If they didn't, I'd hate to see what homes and yards and even the world would look like. Oh, I do hope I won't have to be a nagging mother. But I guess I'll have to be, else I don't see how anything will ever be accomplished. May 19. Today I went home with Beth after school. They have a lovely house and a full-time live-in maid. Beth is Jewish. I've never really had a Jewish friend before, and for some reason I thought they'd be different. I don't know how, because we're all people, but I just thought they'd be, well, more like... As usual, I don't even know what I'm talking about. Beth is really conscientious and worries about her grades, so we did some work, and then listened to records, and drank no-calorie Cokes. She's trying to lose weight, too. I really like her, and it's nice to have a true friend. For confidentially, I didn't really ever feel secure with Gerda. I always wanted to correct her grammar and tell her to watch her clothes and her posture. I guess I'm more like Mom than I thought. It's not that I'm a snob. Really, it's not. But real friendship can't be built on sympathy and a hanging on to someone just to keep from drowning. It has to be built on mutual likes and abilities and, yes, even backgrounds. Boy, Mom would be proud of my thinking and attitude today. It's just too bad we can't communicate anymore. I remember being able to talk to her when I was little, but it's as though we speak a different language now, and the meanings just don't come across the right way. She means something, and I take it another way, or she says something and I think she's trying to correct me or uplift me or preach at me. And I really suspect she isn't doing that at all, just groping and being as lost with words as am I. That's life, I guess. May 22. Beth came over to my house to study today, and Mom and Dad and both the kids like her. They even asked her to call and get permission to stay for dinner. And then Mom is going to take us downtown shopping, since it's Thursday night and the stores are all open. I ran in to change clothes, and Beth ran over to grab her things. We'll pick her up on the way. But I just had to stop and jot the whole ecstatic experience down. It's just too tremendous and delightful and wonderful to keep all bottled up inside. May 24. Beth is a wonderful friend. I guess she's the only best friend I've had since I was a very little girl. We can talk about anything. We even talk a lot about religion. The Jewish-Hebrew faith is a lot different than ours. They have their meetings on Saturday, and they're still looking for Christ or the Messiah to come. Beth loves her grandparents a lot, and she wants me to meet them. She says they're Orthodox and eat meat off one set of plates and milk things off another set of plates. I wish I knew more about my own religion so I could tell Beth. June 3. Today Beth and I talked about sex. Her grandmother told her that when a Jewish boy and girl are getting married, if someone says the girl isn't a virgin and they can prove it, the the boy doesn't even have to marry her. We wondered exactly how they proved such a thing, but neither one of us really know. She said she'd rather ask her grandmother than her mother. But I'd rather ask my mother, if I were to ask anyone, which of course I won't. And my mother wouldn't know about Jewish customs anyway. Beth says she has nightmares about walking down the aisle, wearing a long, beautiful white gown with hundreds of people at her wedding, and someone whispering to the rabbi that she's not a virgin, and the boy turning around and leaving her. I don't blame her. I'd feel the very same way. Someday when she gets up enough nerve, she's going to ask her grandmother or somebody about it. I hope she'll tell me, because I really want to know, too. June 10. Dear Diary, school will soon be over, and now I don't want it to end. Beth and I are having such a good time. Neither one of us are very popular with the boys, but sometimes Beth has to go out with the Jewish sons of her mother's friends. She says it's usually a big bore, and the boys don't like her any more than she likes them. But Jewish families are like that. They want their kids to marry other Jewish kids. Some night, Beth is going to fix me up on a blind date with a nice Jewish boy, to quote her mother. Beth says he'll love it because I'm not Jewish, and he'll feel he's putting something over on his mother. I think I like him already. June 13. Hurrah! School is out! But I'm kind of sad, too. June 15. Beth fixed me up with a boy named Sammy Green. He was incredibly proper and polite to my parents, which made them like him. But once we were out in the car, he was all hands. Parents really are a poor judge of character. Sometimes I wonder how they made it to the age they are. Anyway, the whole night was really stupid. Sam wouldn't even let me watch the movie in peace. Besides, it turned out to be such a dirty film that Beth and I stayed in the ladies' room for a long time after it was over. We were both too self-conscious to come out, but since we couldn't spend the night in there, we finally made our grand entrance into the lobby, pretending that nothing had ever even happened. The boys tried to discuss the movie, but we both ignored them, and it too. June 18. Today I received the ghastly news that Beth is going to have to go to summer camp for 6 weeks. Her folks are going to Europe, so they've made arrangements for her at an all-Jewish camp. I'm heartbroken, and so is she. We've both talked to our parents, but we might as well be talking to the wind. They don't hear us. They don't even listen to us. I guess I'll go spend the summer with Gran as I planned. But even that doesn't seem to hold much interest anymore. June 23. Beth and I have only 2 more days together. Our parting is almost like looking forward to a death. It seems that I've known her always, for she understands me. I must admit that there were even times when her mother arranged dates for her that I was jealous of the boys. I hope it's not strange for a girl to feel that way about another girl. Oh, I hope not. Is it possible that I'm in love with her? Oh, that's dumb, even for me. It's just that she's the dearest friend that I have ever had, or that I shall ever have. June 25. It's over. At noon, Beth is leaving. Last night we said our goodbyes, and we both cried and clung to each other like frightened children. Beth is as alone as am I. Her mother's a screamer and tells her she's being childish and silly. At least Mom and Dad are sympathetic and understand how lonely I'm going to be. In fact, Mother took me shopping and let me spend $5 on a little solid gold necklace with a personal inscription engraved inside. And Dad has told me I can make 2 long-distance calls to her. That's really pretty decent and thoughtful of them. I guess I'm lucky. July 2. Dear Diary, I'm at Gran's, and I have never been more bored in my life. Talk about a long, hot summer, and it isn't even really summer yet. I think I shall lose my mind. I've been reading a book a day since I got here, and already I'm bored out of my skull. It's amazing, because during school, I really longed for the time to stay in bed and just loaf, 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 and read, 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 and watch telly and do the things I want to do. But now I've run out of things. Oh, sheer agony. Sharon has moved, and Debbie is going with some guy, and Marie is on vacation with her folks. I've only been here 5 days. I'll have to force myself to at least stay a week before I ask to go home. Can I stand it without going mad? July 7. Today, a very strange thing happened. At least I hope it's going to happen. Oh, I do, I do, I do. Gramps and I walked downtown to get a present for Alex's birthday, and while we were in the department store, Jill Peters came by. She said hi, and we stopped to talk. I hadn't seen her since we moved away, and I'd never really belonged in her crowd, which were kind of the top echelon. But anyway, she said she wants to go to Dad's university when she graduates from high school, and said she couldn't wait to get out of this little hick town and move to where things really happen. I tried to pretend we were very sophisticated and gay there, but actually I haven't really seen much difference between the two places. I guess I lied a pretty good story, though, because she said she was going to have a few kids in tomorrow night and she'd call me. Oh, I do hope she does. July 8. Oh, diary, I'm so happy I could cry. It did happen. Jill called at exactly 10:32. I know because I'd been sitting by the phone with my watch in my hand trying to send ESP signals to her. She's having a few kids over for an autograph party. Thank heavens I brought my yearbook. It won't be the same as theirs, and none of their pictures will be in it, but then mine won't be in theirs either. I'm going to wear my new white pantsuit, and I have to go now and wash my hair and put it up. It's really getting long, 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 but if I put it up on orange juice cans, I can make it have just the right amount of body and a nice large curl on the bottom. I hope we have enough cans. We've got to. We've simply got to. July 10. Dear Diary, I don't know whether I should be ashamed or elated. I only know that last night I had the most incredible experience of my life. It sounds morbid when I put it in words, but actually it was tremendous and wonderful and miraculous. The kids at Jill's were so friendly and relaxed and at ease that I immediately felt at home with them. They accepted me like I had always been one of their crowd, and everyone seemed happy and unhurried. I loved the atmosphere. It was great, great, great. Anyway, a little while after we got there, Jill and one of the boys brought out a tray of Coke, and all the kids immediately sprawled out on the floor on cushions or curled up together on the sofa and chairs. Jill winked at me and said, "Tonight we're playing Button, Button, Who's Got the Button? You know, the game we used to play when we were kids." Bill Thompson, who was stretched out next to me, laughed, "Only it's just too bad that now somebody has to babysit." I looked up at him and smiled. I didn't want to appear too stupid. Everyone sipped their drinks slowly, and everyone seemed to be watching everyone else. I kept my eyes on Jill, supposing that anything she did, I should do. Suddenly, I began to feel something strange inside myself, like a storm. I remember that 2 or 3 records had played since we had had the drinks, and now everyone was beginning to look at me. The palms of my hands were sweating, and I could feel droplets of moisture on my scalp at the back of my neck. The room seemed unusually quiet, and as Jill got up to close the window shades completely, I thought, "They're trying to poison me. Why? Why would they try to poison me?" My whole body was tense at every muscle, and a feeling of weird apprehension swept over me, strangled me, suffocated me. When I opened my eyes, I realized that it was just Bill who had put his arm around my shoulder. "Lucky you," he was saying in a slow-motioned record on the wrong speed voice. "But don't worry. I'll babysit you. This will be a good trip. Come on, relax. Enjoy it. Enjoy it." He caressed my face and neck tenderly and said, "Honestly, I won't let anything bad happen to you." Suddenly he seemed to be repeating himself over and over like a slow-motioned echo chamber. I started laughing, wildly, hysterically. It struck me as the funniest, most absurd thing I had ever heard. Then I noticed the strange shifting patterns on the ceiling. Bill pulled me down, and my head rested in his lap as I watched the pattern change to swirling colors, great fields of reds, blues, and yellows. I tried to share the beauty with the others, but my words came out soggy, wet and dripping or tasting of color. I pulled myself up and began walking, feeling a slight chill which crept inside as well as outside my body. I wanted to tell Bill, but all I could do was laugh. Soon, whole trains of thought started to appear between each word. I had found the perfect and true and original language used by Adam and Eve, but when I tried to explain, the words I used had little to do with my thinking. I was losing it. It was slipping out of my grasp, this wonderful and priceless and true thing which must be saved for posterity. I felt terrible. And finally I couldn't talk at all and slumped back onto the floor, closed my eyes, and the music began to absorb me physically. I could smell it and touch it and feel it as well as hear it. Never had anything ever been so beautiful. I was a part of every single instrument, literally a part. Each note had a character, shape, and color all its very own, and seemed to be entirely separate from the rest of the score so that I could consider its relationship to the whole composition before the next note sounded. My mind possessed the wisdom of the ages, and there were no words adequate to describe them. I looked at a magazine on the table, and I could see it in 100 dimensions. It was so beautiful I couldn't stand the sight of it and closed my eyes. Immediately I was floating into another sphere, another world, another state. Things rushed away from me and at me, taking my breath away like a drop in a fast elevator. I couldn't tell what was real and what was unreal. Was I the table? Or the book? Or the music? Or was I part of all of them? But it didn't really matter, for whatever I was wonderful. For the first time that I could remember in my whole life, I was completely uninhibited. I was dancing before the whole group, performing, showing off, and enjoying every second of it. My senses were so up that I could hear someone breathing in the house next door, and I could smell someone miles away making orange and red and green ribbed jello. After what seemed eternities, I began to come down, and the party started breaking up. I sort of asked Jill what happened, and she said that 10 out of the 14 bottles of Coke had LSD in them, and button, no one knew just who would wind up with them. Wow, am I glad I was one of the lucky ones. Gramps' house was dark when we got home, and Jill helped me to my room, out of my clothes and into bed, and I drifted off into a seasick type of sleep, wrapped in a general sense of well-being, except for a slight headache that probably was the result of long and intense laughing. It was fun. It was ecstatic. It was glorious. But I don't think I'll ever try it again. I've heard too many frightening stories about drugs. Now that I think back, I should have known what was happening. Any dum-dum should have known. But I thought the whole party was so strange and exciting that I guess I just wasn't listening. Or maybe I didn't want to listen. I'd have been scared to death if I'd known. So I'm glad they did it to me, because now I can feel free and honest and virtuous about not having made the decision myself. And besides, the whole experience is over and past, and I'll never think of it again. July 13. Dear Diary, for 2 days now, I've tried to convince myself that using LSD makes me a dope addict and all the other low-class, unclean, despicable things I've heard about kids that use LSD and all the other drugs. But I'm so, 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 so curious. I simply can't wait to try pot. Only once, I promise. I simply have to see if it's everything that it's cracked up not to be. All the things I've heard about LSD were obviously written by uninformed, ignorant people like my parents, who obviously don't know what they're talking about. Maybe pot.